Take your appropriate roll call, please. Here. Here. All right, thank you. We will begin. I will call on Murthy to, I think you're going to go directly to the 405 issue, is that correct?
Yes, sir. In the interest of time, I will skip the presentation on other project. We will go to 405 because we have some significant progress being made there. Let me switch on to 405. On I-405 Sapalwada Pass Improvement Projects, the project is coming along according to the schedule, but we do have some challenging right-of-way issues with Veterans Administration, GSA, and also with the Salvation Army, which we are working through Caltrans right-of-way procurement as well as our legal folks on that. We want to concentrate this morning on the Mulholland Bridge demolition that is being planned for July 15th. We are having an extensive coordination challenges with California Highway Patrol, Fish and Games, Southern California Gas, City of Los Angeles. We have been in meetings with them, so we want to give you an update this morning on as to what we are doing in terms of community and media relations to convey the message how, when the freeway will be shut down and what options the commuters will have to use the to get to the freeway or to get to other places of interest. So with that, I'm going to call on Linda Bybee to make the presentation on what's being done towards community community reach. Linda?
Thank you, Murthy. Thank you, board members. We are keenly aware of the significance of what this operation is going to mean, and I have brought Yvette Rapoz to make the presentation to you today. Yvette Rapoz has been the directing the outreach for this program, and she is the lead in coordinating these aspects. Yvette?
Thank you, Linda. Let me just get this presentation up here. I need to get it up. Let's see how to close this. Okay, I think this will work. Good morning, board members. Thank you for the opportunity to provide you an update on the outreach efforts for the Mulholland Bridge demolition and related full closure of the 405 freeway the weekend of July 16th. Before I do that, I'd like to direct you to page 2 of your presentation where I show you the regional freeway detours. As you can see on this graph here, the closure is highlighted in pink. The goals of the project and the incident command are to divert traffic as far away from the city center as possible during this weekend closure. Therefore, you will note on the recommended detours that we will encourage the traveling public to use the routes depicted in blue and to avoid those depicted in orange. We've got a big task ahead of us to communicate this to the greater public, and we're up for that challenge. Community relations and media relations, together with Caltrans, have taken the lead in developing plans that will communicate the closure, related impacts, and anticipated detours at every level, local, regional, statewide, and nationwide. In so doing, we are leveraging the expertise and resources of our partners. We are currently in the process of formulating a joint information center that will be a critical part of the efforts of the incident command on this effort. The Joint Information Center will be made up of representative public information officers from the following agencies: the Los Angeles Police Department, the Los Angeles Fire Department, California Highway Patrol, Metro, Caltrans, and the Los Angeles Department of Transportation. It is the Joint Information Center's goal to have an inclusive outreach plan no later than Wednesday next week. In the interim, Community Relations has identified a three-phase rollout approach that will serve our saturation outreach strategies. The first phase, currently underway, includes preliminary media and social media networking, briefing sessions to key stakeholder groups within the project alignment, and initial contact with vested interest groups regionally. These include groups like LA World Airports, the ports, travel-related venues and services, educational, sports, and entertainment venues in both the public and private sector. This is not meant to be an exhaustive list, but rather a hint of where we focused our attention in this phase. As of last week, we started announcing the date through Metro Briefs in numerous print media. In addition to continuing the above, the second phase includes posting the approved detours and alternative maps on all of our outreach materials and website, such that we can issue weekly bulletins and updates. We will also commence print and online advertisement of the closures. In addition to all of the activities in phases one and two, phase three will commence the radio advertisement, further penetrating a wider audience, ensuring that the system-wide alerts and changeable message signs are intact and ready for further messaging. Caltrans Public Affairs will work with every district in the state of California so that they also penetrate their constituencies, casting a much wider net. From this point to the path of implementation, there will be daily bulletins going out to listservs and social media outlets, including Facebook, Nixle, and Twitter, and will be updated on our 24-hour hotline. The Incident Command Center and Media Command Center will either be based out of the City of Los Angeles Emergency Operations Center or Caltrans Traffic Management Center, and have made provisions to ensure that emergency responders can get to calls in a safe and expeditious manner at all times through this demolition weekend. Safety is critical to a successful operation this weekend, and it informs everything we do. We will issue a board box to the Board of Directors as the Joint Information Center's plan is finalized. Thank you.
In addition to this, we're calling upon the full community relations team to exercise communications with our stakeholders countywide. We've assembled a database of 6,500 that we will begin to send this information out on a weekly basis. And I want to introduce Mark Littman, who's head of our media relations here. The I-405 team has been a very successful integrated program between the outreach and the media, and I think you've witnessed every time there is information that's critical to the milestones out there, we've had great media coverage. So, Mark?
Thank you. You know, if you stick around long enough, you get to relive history. Back in 1984, and for 2 years leading up to the Olympics, I was telling the media and anybody who would listen, stay off the road. And especially on days when we had multiple sporting events at different venues throughout the region. And here I am 27 years later telling the media and anybody who will listen, stay off the road come July 16th and 17th when they do the Mulholland Bridge work as part of this $1 billion I-405 Sepulveda Pass Improvements project. So just like the Olympics, this is an interagency effort. They talked about the command center, but we're working very closely with a variety of public and private agencies, not just Caltrans and LADOT, CHP, LAFD, LAPD, the elected officials. We're working with the private sector, the auto club, trying to get the California Trucking Association, airports, and a variety of private institutions like Skirball, the Getty, and others to put out the word. It has to be an interagency effort. It goes beyond this region. We need to put out the word to throughout the state, throughout nationally as well. And we got to give advance notice. We've actually got a lot of coverage in the past week. The media is pretty much saturated. They know in advance that this is happening. It's really important to tell people because they're planning their summer vacations and they need to plan appropriately. Again, the key messages are this weekend, stay off the road. I'm talking about the weekend of July 16th and 17th. If you do have to drive, use the recommended alternative routes, plan ahead, but bear in mind there could be significant traffic. This is it's manageable. We want to put this in context that, you know, this is part of the improvement project, short-term pain, long-term gain, but you need to pay attention to this. If you divert 500,000 vehicles from the freeway that weekend, that's going to have a huge impact, not just on that particular corridor, but throughout the region. It can be managed. We have a series of press events planned. We were planning one on Monday. CHP has asked us to hold off for a little bit so they can better coordinate the traffic management there. That's acceptable. We don't want to go out before the public for our briefing unless everyone is in sync, that we convey a high level of confidence that we can manage this project and that we can deal with issues like fire life safety, people in the area saying, hey, if I have a fire or at my home or a heart attack or an emergency, will you be able to respond? We need to be able to assure the public you're going to be taken care of and that if you cooperate with us, this can be manageable. And we've had experience of other major freeways, the I-5 tunnel fire at Castaic, the Bay Bridge had a number of weekend closures. This is in the Olympic experience. So we're ready for it. We're going to be working 24/7, leading up through the demolition work. We expect a lot of media coverage that weekend as well. But we're going to keep hammering home through every method we can, including social media, that this is coming. You got to be prepared for it. Work cooperatively with us. And lastly, I'll say that I don't have to wait 27 years for history to repeat itself, because once this is done, about a year later, they're going to do the other half of the bridge. So if any questions?
Yeah, I don't think any of us were. I thought we were going to do it all at once and get it done. So you're going to do it a year later on the other half, huh?
That's right.
How kind of you. While I think it's manageable, I mean, obviously the issues of traffic control and particularly that first few hours on all the detours will be incredibly important. What about are you working with, like, the airlines as an example, part of your ticket purchase warnings that
yes.
weekend, particularly if you're coming from that way and, you know, you're trying to catch an airplane. If you're driving, you can get delayed on it going on vacation, but if you've got an airplane to catch at LAX and you're coming from the north.
Let me respond to that. We're going to issue a board box next week that will have a full extent of the outreach that has already taken place in making those contacts, and we're going to have a status contact update on all of those key vested interests, and those initial contacts have already been made. Obviously, we're concerned about the Van Nuys flyaway, all of the airlines, freight, all of that, and so when that board box is issued next week, there you'll be able to have an index and refer to precisely all of those different areas, and then, you know, if anyone finds that they have more recommendations for us, obviously we want
to
hear about that.
They can help you. I mean, they can be a tool for the,
yes.
for you to use them as well, because that can be part of a purchase, just a reminder this weekend, blah, blah, blah. Could be anyone. I mean, it should be anyone and everyone to have the entire airline association be your partner in this to get the word out. In addition, what about, I was coming back from the desert the other day and my wife's car and turned it on and it says, that little box, the little GPS says, wind warning in 25 miles and high winds as part of the, so are we going to be able to do that? So somebody, that they are fortunate enough to have that little box, the traffic that comes on and it says, freeway closure.
Caltrans signage will be from Central California to San Diego. So,
I'm not talking about signage. I'm talking about the cars. I'm talking about your GPS system in your car.
Oh, the GPS. I'm sorry.
Oh, this thing, and the true, I mean, the winds are like 50, 60 miles an hour. And it was in your car. It's not in.
That data comes from Caltrans, so it's updated with the information that we put out.
And how to get in that little box in my wife's car, that's what I don't know.
We're also working with Google. Google has an app on iPhones and GPS, which is what you're talking about.
And all those.
Exactly.
Right.
We've made contact with Google, and we're seeing how we can partner with them on that.
Well, Sigalert.com, too. That's another great program. Is that yours, Sigalert.com?
From its Caltrans, but they're a private company.
I mean, you can punch those little triangles, and it'll tell you, wreck here, off to the side, and... hopefully we're really using the social media and
yes.
apps and everything else, because it's amazing. I mean,
so social media has actually been one of our chief communicators for this project, and we're going to enhance that for this, and so that it has a more widespread distribution, because obviously we have local, we have regional, we have statewide, and really, we have people coming into the state. So
when you go on your app, like right now, you hit Sigler.com, I live by that thing, on my iPhone, and you hit that, and there's always a little pop-up that says, buy something, so you could have 405 closure in there. I mean, if you work it right, I would assume.
We are working with Sig Alert. We're also working with 511. We're also working with AM frequency 1610, which is the highway activity radio. This is, you see a lot of these signs on the highway. We have a whole host of innovative approaches to how we're getting the word out.
First question is to Mr. Murthy. Can you walk us through the steps, how you came to this conclusion that the entire freeway has to be closed? Because we're going to have to explain this to people in the public. They're going to wonder, well, why couldn't you just close half of the freeway instead of the whole freeway? So can you let us know what your alternatives were, just as you would if we're building a subway or a light rail line, so we'll know what the options were that you looked at?
Yes, sir. I'll have Mr. Mike Barber walk us through the steps. So Mike, he's our project director for the I-405.
Hi, Mike Barber. Yeah, the reason we had to close the entire freeway, the Mullen Bridge, the main span spans the entire 405 freeway. So there wasn't a case where we could, if there was a support in the median, we could actually tear down one half the bridge at a time and keep, you know, one northbound or southbound open. But in this particular bridge, it spans the entire freeway, so it would be unsafe to be tearing it down with on one side and having traffic on the other.
And how long did the entire demolition process take?
We're at 53 hours or so. We're looking at potentially we can shorten that time frame possibly. But the actual demo work would, there's different phases of that. Initially, around 10 o'clock on Friday, we'll be shutting down lanes. By 12, the entire freeway will be shut down. They'll be doing some prep work at that time. They have to haul in sand, put about 6 foot blanket of sand underneath the bridge to protect the freeway. So the actual demo work will probably start probably in the neighborhood of maybe 6 hours after the main closure.
You know what time?
I think at about noon, at 12 o'clock on Friday night, it should be completely closed. So I'm anticipating that they'll be doing some demo activities, like saw cutting and whatnot on the bridge, but the actual mechanical equipment that's actually making the most noise probably wouldn't start until probably early morning on Saturday.
So the short answer is that there is no other way because of this particular engineering for this bridge?
Yeah, the configuration of the bridge does not allow us to do it any other way.
And I thought I heard someone say that you're going to come back a year from now to do something again. What is that?
Well, the demolition and rebuilding of this structure happens in phases. One of the requirements of the environmental document was to keep traffic on this bridge during construction. So what we're doing is the first phase of this project is to demolish about half the bridge on the south side, then rebuild it. The traffic during this demolition process will, you know, during the first phase will be put on the north side. But after we've rebuilt the south side, we'll switch the traffic to the south, the new structure in the south, and then demo the north, and then rebuild the north side. And so eventually end up opening up the whole entire structure to traffic.
There is no way to redirect traffic where you would close down one side of the freeway completely, and the other side you would have north and southbound traffic going at the same time. There is no way to do that?
No, there's not. It comes back to there's just one span, and it spans the entire freeway. So any combination of traffic on either side would be unsafe.
And we also, didn't we have some neighborhood issues?
Oh, we have a few neighborhood issues. we've tried a lot of different options to take care of the neighborhood. And in fact, we had an alignment to bypass, you know, but we ran into some problems with that. So we ended up going back to the baseline, which is what we're proposing today.
Well, on the, I'm not sure if you're the one to answer this question. I know the 761 goes down Sepulveda Boulevard. And I also know that the flyaway from Van Nuys flyaway station goes down the 405 freeway, and that will connect folks to LAX. So what are you proposing that our operators do, and what are the alternative routes for, one, the flyaway, folks getting to the airport, and two, our own system?
I can address the procedures we've done so far, and I think this is what the media relations and community relations have been dealing with. We looked at internally. We want to get the information out to as many of stakeholders, not only locally, but also regionally. One of the things we've been talking about is pushing the traffic out as far away from the 405 as we can to let those folks kind of gravitate towards the open freeways. The message has to be for folks that want to get to the airport from the valley, is that they need to anticipate, we need to give them some idea how long that commute's going to be, whether it's taking a van pool or some other public transportation, but also their own commuting. So we're in a process, we've done a significant amount of work to this point. From here out, it's more on the outreach, trying to better target how much time they should be anticipating to get from different locations in LA, specifically going around this area.
That doesn't really answer my question. My question really has to do with the folks who are coming from the Van Nuys Flyway to LAX. They go down the 405 freeway. Our own line, the 761 Rapid, goes down Sepulveda Boulevard and a small sliver on the southbound of the 405 freeway. That's the question I'm asking, but maybe you don't have the answer, though, so don't try to answer it if you don't. Let me have somebody who does have the answer.
There's a dynamic in place right now. Those contacts have been made, and part of what is still being finessed are the precise street closures along the corridor. So, as I said, we're going to be preparing a dynamic status report with the primary contacts, and we will have that in a changing report about what those arrangements are going to be. So, that's in process right now. We don't have all the answers, but it will be part of this before the implementation takes place.
I did ask the operations folks about the 761 in particular. I think they're going to truncate that because a lot of the service is on like Van Nuys Boulevard and so forth. So they're working on that, and I think there's some like the 233 or something too affects that corridor.
Okay, so are you communicating with the operations side?
Yeah, they're working on that. We also asked them this morning to look at, we have 79, 80 miles of rail. It is possible to take Metro Rail with number of connections to the shuttle service to LAX. I've asked the operations people today to look into, and Art's asked them to look into perhaps beefing up some of the rail services. That might be an alternative for people going to LAX. Well, there's the red line right now. You got to do some transfers. The red line to the blue line, the green line, and then the aviation station. There's the free shuttle bus that goes into LAX. So it's sort of a pain for people to use that service, but it might be, you know, one option for people. And we'll be contacting the airports on PIO to also talk about that, because one of the key questions the media is going to ask is what happens to the flyway service.
We don't have the answer yet. Are you talking with the folks from the
airport? Yes. Yes, we are. We've already made contact with them. Yeah. And when the board box comes out this week, you'll have that extensive list. And, of course, any briefings that you would like to have, we will offer those at any time. We want to make sure that our board is well informed, because we know there's going to be inquiries coming from a broad base of constituents on this issue.
Is Sepulveda Boulevard also going to be closed?
No.
It'll be open.
Yes. That is going to be one of the main alternatives.
An alternative.
So it will be open?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Going to be crowded for a few days.
While the Sepulveda is going to be open, it's going to be a very challenging site for anybody to drive through there. And one of our messages is stay away from Sepulveda as well, because we have a lot of first responder issues with that route, too.
Okay. Anything else?
That's all on 405. Mr. Chairman, we do have other presentations.
The chairmanship, July 1st to Mr. Villaraigosa. For anyone else who wants it through July 17th.
Mr. Chairman, we do have other presentations if you like. If not, we can continue with the agenda. Depending on the time for whatever you direct, we'll do that.
Okay. Are there any specific items that the members would like to hear about? Any particular area?
Well, we have a number of items here. We have item 3. Are we
Well, I mean, other than item three. We can jump to item three if you, unless you want to hear about it. Okay. All right, let's just jump to item number three then.
Yes, sir. Item number three is requesting approval for the CEO to increase the contract value.
Excuse me, just a second before you got item three. I forgot to look at my agenda here. We also, do you have any items that you'd like to cover as Director Caltrans here? Okay.
If you want to go to item three, we can come back to
it. Okay. All right, let's go to item three then, and we'll come back to Mike. Okay, thank you. Sorry.
Okay. All right, sir. Item number three is to requesting authorization to increase the total contract value for contract number MCO69 with Stantec from $16 million, not to exceed $16 million, which will take their LP authorized cost to $21.5 million to $37.5 million. The reason for the extension is when we selected Stantec to provide the construction management services, that was in 2009, their contract was for 5 years and 2 one-year options, and we had a list of tasks that they were to perform at that time, and now they have come to pretty close to allocated budget that we have. We have a list of tasks that we asked them to do that's in the attachment at the back of the report. Originally, they were tasked to do the Metro Orange Line 405 Sepulveda Union Division construction support for some of the Measure R project and construction support for other capital projects. However, between 2009 and to date, we had several new projects that came online for construction, and we had to request their construction management support to do those functions. So that list is already shown here as the project worked on in FY10 and FY11. The 24 task orders were issued to them. It is the staff's recommendation that they have performed their tasks well to the satisfaction of all their project managers, and we do need to continue their services on some of these significant projects like the Orange Line, which is going to get completed in another 18 months or so, I-405 scheduled to get completed in 2013, and then the Express Lane project, which is starting full speed at this point. So we are requesting authorization to let Stantec continue those tasks. If you have any specific questions, we have procurement here, and we'll be happy to answer.
The question I have, just off top, my original presentation from you and others was 7.5 to 29 million, and all of a sudden we got 16 to 37. So,
yeah. Okay.
That's a pretty quick revision.
Yes, sir. The reason for that was we do have in the report, we are going to seek for another construction management support team to be selected to take up the workload that we are trying to get done in FY12. So when this was presented to the board staff briefing session, it was everybody's recommendation, rather than coming back in 6 months, why don't we, as we do for all other work orders, give them a full year work order, FY12 work order, so they can provide the services for the entire year without any disruption from the services that they are doing. So that's the reason for the jump. Instead of 6 months, it's now through FY12.
Thank you. What strikes me here is that we are just in the 2 year of a 5 year contract, and we've already ran out of money. What was the issue? Why did we underestimate the amount of money this would cost us?
The original estimate we had was about $21.5 million or so. At that time, we did not anticipate some of the projects coming on board quickly. For example, the Express Lane project was still at that time under negotiation between us and the FAWA. We were not sure when it will start. So that came on all of a sudden, and we had to gear up to get that going in full speed. So we had to ask Stantec to provide the services. We also did the same thing on, for example, the Boucher Street storage project. That was not in their contract. Also, we needed help in contract administration support for multiple projects that we are doing. So we asked Stantec to provide that. Division 20 car wash and cleaning platform thing, that came on board later on. So we had several of these projects that came in, and we did not have the Metro staff on board to take care of all the construction oversight.
So why not just... Sure.
It is true. We have four already selected small contracts. That's why we are taking the sound wall project and those activities away from Stantec and giving it to those small contracts.
Well, why not just do a new procurement? This is $16 million when the original contract was 21.5. It's almost doubling the original contract. Why not just do a new procurement when you have all these new task orders coming down?
We have new... couple of things. One is they have already provided the resident engineer and the construction inspectors on some of the ongoing jobs, like the 405 job, which is 30 to 40% in construction, or end line, which is about 40% in construction. So we have staff who are experienced and working well with the integrated project office. So we want to keep those services going on, where all the new work that's coming up, we are going to procure another construction management support team in addition to the four that we already selected recently.
When I was on the school board and we took on the massive construction program, we would assign construction management firms to particular projects. And they would finish those projects. We would evaluate whether those projects were well done, their performance, etc. Here it seems like we are giving construction management firms a contract, and then we're just adding additional projects to them without them coming to the... I mean, I don't understand. Well, how are we selecting construction management firms,
yes,
assigning them projects, doing an evaluation, and not only that, I mean, up front knowing, telling the public exactly what they're going to do and then where this ends. It seems like we're adding things here without going out and doing the proper performance evaluation. And I'll open it up again because it's a significant amount of procurement that we're asking for here. Okay.
One of the project delivery approach that we have taken is, for example, on the east side, we did not have a construction management team independent of the project to come in and do it. We had an integrated project office where MTA's person was in charge of that integrated project office, and everybody worked for that individual. So we held our MTA person responsible for the project delivery rather than handing it over to different consultants and ask them to take care of it. So the integrated project office was very successful on the east side. So we are using the same model on all of these projects. For example, on the toll, express toll lane, we have taken over the trailers that was vacated by the east side as our integrated project office, and that's what we are doing there.
But a lot of these projects are not related to one another, and they're all over our region. How do we... I mean, I would imagine that if we have a contractor doing work on a specific project and then somehow there's other projects related to that, okay, you want to do an addendum to their amendment because they're familiar with what's going on and you want to continue that momentum. But here, the project's just all over. We're just adding projects. I don't understand what the management expertise experience is helping us by just giving them a number of projects that are all over the region for different types of services that we provide.
Good question. We do have an integrated project office for Orange Line. That's where the people working on the Orange Line design construction located. So we have a MTA is project manager in charge for that place. Same thing with the I-405. We have an integrated project office where everybody reports and works. We are doing the same model everywhere. They're all under one supervision, under one roof, so they can get to coordinate and do their activities rather than seeking, you know, approvals and permission from different places.
How big did the contract come in for?
Originally, we looked at the projects that were coming up, and at the time of requesting approval of Stantec's contract, we felt we could use them on the RN line, 405, Union Division, construction support for some of the...
How much money?
Pardon me?
How much money?
$21.5 million.
Why did they use that?
We have given them 24 task orders on various projects that's listed on the back of the page here on the attachment B. So we have listed all of them, and I think Michelle has some numbers here.
Okay, so yeah, we have issued 24 different tasks on this contract. Work that some we had anticipated that would be coming up for the Stantec contract, and some we had not anticipated.
Is this an open-ended contract?
It
was a fix till they came back and asked for more money.
We negotiate the individual prices for each type of work that we're going to issue to them, but then each task order we negotiate. When we came to the board to get it awarded, we did say not to exceed a certain amount, which I don't know off the top of my head. At any rate, to date, Supervisor, we have paid out $13 million of the original contract only on these 24 task orders. Now, you are right. The initial concept behind the contract was that it would be we would initially go out with it for these specific tasks, the orange line, for example, the I-405, and as more work came on, then we would add it. We kept it small. In the meantime, we have now issued 4 additional CM contracts, which Director Wiesar was asking about, for additional CM work with different areas of expertise. So there are 2 small CM contracts for sound walls. There is 1 small CM contract for bus facilities work and 1 for rail facilities. The board approved that last month. So we are definitely trying to spread the work around.
All right, but at the same time, Councilman Wiesar asked the question about whether there should be an evaluation. Obviously, the quality of the work is,
well, none. Otherwise, you have to be awarding other contracts.
Is that correct?
Very much so. They also do work for procurement, by the way. They have contract administrators in the project offices.
That's the answer. I'm not sure we're going around in circles as to why are we giving them more work. Obviously, they do high-quality work. One of the things that came up last month, if I remember correctly, is I was very impressed with the DBE on this one, right?
Yes, they have. They
broke it down and who created a real environment for many of the smaller and disadvantaged businesses to take part in part of the contract. And I was told it was this particular contractor who created this, and so it was very positive. But I think that we're not getting clear answers here as to what it is. Obviously, there are evaluations done, because you wouldn't want to be handing out contracts. And we could have a larger CM contract for a fixed amount for a period of time. This is the reason that we've done it, is so we would have more control, right?
Yes, we do. We have actually...
asking the question about...
They have, in fact...
clear answers on.
They've, in fact, exceeded their original commitment on their DBE goal, which is a voluntary goal on this contract, and they are in excess of 24% of small and disadvantaged business participation on the contract. Another one of the handouts that we handed out this morning, which I also think addresses Director Wiesar's questions, is what has the agency done in the past 10 years That's one of the handouts that we handed out. And we've shown you, we've had a variety of CM contractors, and we have had them on each of the different projects, as Director Wiesar said, is a good way to, a good approach. And then we also included for you the dollar value of each of those contracts. Sometimes the CM contractor focused solely on one contract. Sometimes the CM contractor had to do what we've had to do with Stantec, which is to assign them other work as was in their area of expertise or in their subcontractor area of expertise. And this is all so that we can respond without hiring permanent FTEs so that we can respond to the contractual needs.
What you're describing is a bench contract, but that's not what I see here. I mean, when we get bench contracts, you get a number of CM firms, you awarded them, say, $20 million, and then you go to them with specific task orders when you want them or they have expertise to widen a freeway or to do construction management for a rail line. But we don't have bench contracts here, do we?
Instead, we had recently you approved the four small contractors, and we intend to come back to you as the projects get into construction to add more construction management support contracts in addition to Stantec.
But this is like a bench contract, correct?
That's the only contract we had to get construction going at that time.
The answer is yes, we do have bench contracts. The difference between a bench contract and this particular contract is on a bench contract for each work order or for each task order, we would put it out to the bench and then we would collect bids from each of the qualified candidates on the bench and they would give us their bid and then we would select one. The reason that is not the ideal product delivery for this particular type of work is because, for instance, if you'll look at one of the major projects, well, two major projects Stantec is working on is the Orange Line project and the I-405, and then the one that we added, which was the tolling.
Yeah.
So for the I-405, we want the same firm to provide the continuing elements of work. This is what Mr. Murthy was trying to explain in the very beginning of his presentation. They become familiar with you heard in the presentation earlier about the many outreach issues that we have, the press issues. So not going to a bench of different contractors, keeping the additional pieces of work with the same contractor in the same integrated project office leads to a better end product, as Supervisor Molina said. We are very satisfied with the product that this contractor has provided.
Okay, and one more clarification. My first question was, you originally asked for $21 million for 5 years for specified projects.
Not for 5 years. That was the length of the term of the contract was for 5 years. The initial scope that we had identified was less than 5 years. And I believe my understanding of the statement of work is that the initial $20 million scope was for the first 2 years, and it has approximately lasted for the first 2 years. We added some additional scope that we weren't planning, particularly for the express lanes. So that's why we've
What I have here, it says the original contract was worth $21.5 million and was for a term of 5 years with 2 one-year options.
Right, but the money wasn't for a term of 5 years.
Okay.
Poor wording, I apologize.
Okay, and so you originally anticipate, so according to you, you're going according to plan. The projects you wanted to complete, and you knew you were going to complete them within 2 years, you've done them, and you've said $13 million here.
$13 million spent paid today.
Paid today. And so you feel that you're on target with this procurement?
Yes, they are.
And everything's according to plan? Okay.
We very closely monitor their efforts. So each individual they have on board, they have to provide, and we are supervising. They have particular tasks assigned to them to make sure that they are done. And we get a monthly report which identifies every individual task that they have done. So we have a pretty close supervision over their activities.
And we review every invoice more than once.
Okay, sure. No.
Mr. Murthy.
Yes, sir.
Were you in your position that you're in now at the time that this contract was granted?
I didn't
hear. Were you in the position that you now hold when this contract was let out?
It's going to create a lot of this.
No, did you have the job you have today when their contract was awarded? And I don't know. When was the... Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Can you walk me through it? I'm new on the block again. Old, but back new. Can you walk me through the original scope of work for this contract? Can you have someone help you walk me through the scope of work?
I do not have it in front of me at this point.
I can help. Okay.
I don't have it with me right now, sir. I'll be happy to provide that to you later on.
Do you have it?
I can give you a general idea of what a construction management consultant does.
For this contract.
For this contract,
yes.
So we knew when we awarded the contract that we wanted construction management assistance with the Orange Line project, with the I-405. Those two I know for sure. What a construction management consultant does is to provide mainly people who have specific skills. For example, on this project, we have a project manager, we have contract administrators, we have CAD operator, we have construction inspectors who help us out on the I-405. This prevents us from having to hire FTEs who, when the I-405 project is done, then we no longer need their services.
Let me see if I can just get to where I'm
trying
to get to. The original contract was for this contractor was for Orange Line 405.
Was there any
other project that this contractor was supposed to work on?
I believe we had listed.
Mr. Wilson, it's in attachment.
Union Division was listed.
Staff report, there's a list.
Yeah, and some construction support for Measure R capital projects. It was on the last page.
Five.
Okay, so according to Mr. Taylor, it's an Orange Line 405 widening Union Division construction support. Measure R projects, construction support for other capital projects. So as I'm looking at this board report, which is dated May 19th, item number 3, it says Orange Line 405 widening I-10, I-110, express toll lanes. For Crenshaw LEX Transit Corridor. So according to what I'm reading in my board report, as compared to what Mr. Taylor just gave me, there seems to be some additional work, different types of work, than what was originally proposed under this contract. Am I reading it clearly or not?
You're reading it correctly, yes, sir.
Okay. That's what I want to make sure of. So if that being the case, it almost sounds like you like this contractor, they do good work, and so you see other work coming forward, and so instead of going out to bid, you're using this contractor to extend their contract or expand their contract. Is that pretty much what you're doing?
That is correct, because they are already working on those projects.
Well, I don't know. According to the original proposal here, at least the one that Mr. Taylor gave me, the attachment B, doesn't mention anything about Crenshaw, doesn't mention I-10. Doesn't mention 110 unless that's somehow under the construction support for other capital projects. Now,
Director Wilson,
you really mean?
Well, and if I could clarify, sometimes. So, for example, let's take the Boucher Street Storage Project, which is on your list there as some additional work. The amount of this work was approximately $25,000. So that means we put For a limited period of time, some technical support was required for that project, maybe an inspector, maybe an engineer. Another example is for the ATMS upgrade, which is another project that's listed. The value of that change, that work order, was $139,000. So this, although this is a long list, the activities in and of themselves would not have merited an entirely new procurement to send an inspector for 3 weeks out to assist us on a construction, on an ongoing project. Therefore, we turn to the firm that we know has the expertise, can get someone out there right away for us, get the work done, and then get back off the job.
So would you say this type of practice, is this pretty common practice for our agency?
That's correct, yes, sir.
So if a contractor is successful, for example, in getting a contract, then they pretty much have their foot in the door for any other expensive work. Is that correct?
Not unless we authorize them to.
We is the board, we is who?
If we exceed the authorization beyond the CEO, we will come to the board, seek approval.
And you did on these expensive...
smaller ones, it's within the CEO's authority and procurement authority.
Today we're here asking for additional...
What is the CEO's authority? Could you tell me what those things are, those thresholds are?
It's a million.
Million, I believe.
Construction. $1 million is what the board authorized to the CEO for construction, only $500,000 for non-construction authorities.
So you within your authority to do expensive work if you like the work of a contractor. Is that pretty much how it works?
Well, it wouldn't be.
Well, I have, except for the word expensive,
that,
I would
that
agree.
That only applies if the contract allows that. This contract does in that clause that says support for other capital projects.
So I guess as a board member, from my perspective, I need to really pay a close attention when you have language in a contract that says support for other capital projects, because that could mean anything, as long as it stays within that threshold.
It could mean any project within that definition, within that contractual allowance.
But what I'm hearing, though, Mr. Taylor, is that this work was 405 Orange Line, completely unrelated type of work, in my opinion. The Orange Line is a dedicated busway. The 405 widening, kind of a different kind of an animal, in my view. These other projects, the 110 and the 1 and the 10 freeway and the express lane and the Crenshaw, they don't all seem to be that related to this type of work.
Director Wilson?
I'm trying to understand what your thinking is when you do this kind of work, so I can have a better picture of how to deal with this in the future.
Director Wilson, one of the handouts that I provided this morning is actually an excerpt from the Stantec contract. It's titled at the top, Exhibit 2, Statement of Work. And on the very front page, it lists the responsibilities that the MTA is responsible for in project activities. These are the kinds of things that the CM contractor would then provide assistance to us to. And so you can see that this type of a contractor is not a specialist in highway programs, or is not a specialist on a busway project or a rail project. They are a specialist in project management. So we have called on them for contract administration assistance, for project management assistance, for scheduling assistance, for cost estimating, very big part. When a contractor wants to submit a change order, we have to be able to analyze if the contractor, what he says it's going to cost. We want an independent cost estimate. So we might use our project management consultant, Stantec, to help us to provide that cost estimate. So this is a more general type of a contractor. We are also going to issue separate CM contracts, one for the West Side Subway, one for the Regional Connector. For those two, we may look more towards a CM contractor with tunneling expertise or a CM contractor with rail expertise. So we can focus our CM contractor when it is more advantageous for us to structure the contract.
That's what we plan to do for the other projects.
I can appreciate what you're saying and what you're doing, but as I see it, it appears to me that once you have a contract for construction management and you do a decent job, that it's pretty much an assurance that you're going to get other work without having that work go out to bid. So it almost seems like another construction management firm who bid for the same original scope of work is kind of disadvantaged because they can't come back because you've already done good work with them. And this could go on for, we started out at $16 million, now we're talking $37 million. That's almost, isn't that twice? Isn't that twice the amount? Isn't it?
Almost.
Well, 21.5.
21.5, so it's almost, it's over half. It's over half. So that's almost like, you know, years ago we had the great change order artists. They would come in, they'd low bid on a contract, and then before you know it, 10 change orders later, they're back at above the original bid price and above everybody else.
Except, I want to make sure you distinguish. This is not change orders.
Correct.
Well, I understand that, but it's just a different game that contractors are using, and I'm not saying
well,
that
it is what we did. And
yes. It is work that we assigned, and it's at the rates.
Mr. Chairman, this is for the third year of this five-year contract.
The contract that we decided.
This is a contract that was set up with $21 million for the first year,
right.
2 years.
2 years.
And now we're talking about another $16 million for the third year.
But I think the point is, as Supervisor Mulaney's making, is true, and that's what we got to clarify. This is what we decided to do. We decided to do it this way. Okay?
Yeah.
We decided to do it this way. So if you would just...
Got it. And it gives them flexibility. But at the same time, why would they come back just two years into the contract and ask for another $16 million? Why didn't...
Because they had additional projects.
Because the $21 million was...
We anticipated that we would do this.
$21 million was for the first 2 years.
Yes.
Okay. It was only for the first 2 years.
And it is traditional that we do come back usually annually for the annual work program so that board knows what's going on.
Done for a very specific reason. You know, because you were originally, they would ask for so much money they couldn't really tell us what it was for. So we did it in smaller increments to give them flexibility so that we would get a document like this that would tell us what it's for.
But
and we also have at that time, if the smaller contract, if the contractor's not doing a good job, we had the ability to take them out and rebid the project. We could do that. We could do that today. But the point being is that this was done for a very specific reason, so that we didn't get this humongous amount of money. We say, well, what's all this money for? Well, we don't know yet because we're only year one of the contract. We wanted to come back to it.
Well, one of my concerns, another one, is the original estimate of work. I'm not sure how we came up with $16 million then when you knew there were going to be other projects, because I thought I heard you say that you knew there was going to be additional work.
I didn't know.
But I thought I heard them say that.
For example, when we awarded this contract, we did not know we would have the grant for the express lanes, the hot lanes project.
So that
was additional.
And the other
work.
Projects that you have on, why would you then put construction support for other capital projects if you didn't anticipate something?
We set the contract up so we, as Director Kanabi said, so we would have the flexibility to assign work as the work came up. That was what the contract was for.
I understand all that, but I still, it goes back to me to the original estimate of work. It seems to me that if you have done this before, and I think you said you have, that you would have said, okay, this is what the work is today, but we anticipate that it could cost X if this project comes along. I am concerned that what we're doing here is going to impact the Measure R projects and how things can go over budget, because you start out today at a certain amount, and before you know it, that project is eating up funds for decade number two and decade number three because we did it this way.
But these are not over budget requests. This is additional work requests.
Was this in the budget? Was this in that contract?
Each of the work orders we have assigned to Stantec have been within the life of project budget for each of the individual projects they have worked on.
So what you're saying is this $37 million was a part of your original life of project budget. That's what you're saying.
Absolutely.
All of the variety of projects.
And so instead of them coming to ask for us and putting it all together and say, request the board $45 million, as an example, to cover the life of the project, this board decided, and originally started the construction committee, decided to do it in smaller increments so we at least have a handle on it. And if somebody's doing a bad job, we're not committed to $47 million.
I think that makes sense. I think it makes good sense. As I said, my concern is that the estimates are not real. And I've heard, you know, I've been at this board for about 3 months now, and this is not the first time that I've heard an estimate that was given. The last time it was actually over budget. This is within the life of project. But
within the life of project.
To me, there's a pattern. There's a pattern that's occurring where we are continually to spend more money than was originally told to us. And we are not an unlimited funding group. We have limits. Right?
Absolutely. One thing, Director, I want to make clear is we are also, our projects are depending on the financing available to for construction. We don't want to go and make a commitment for the entire life of project, for the entire construction at a time. For example, we don't know today whether regional connector is going to go forward, Crenshaw is going to go forward, Subway to Sea is going to go forward. So we have to restrict ourselves to the current scope and the best estimate that we can make as to what we want to use them for, and not make a long-term commitment for the entire life of the project cost.
I think it makes sense to do that. I do. Yeah. I do. I'm not in disagreement with you on that, but what I'm concerned with is that the estimates, I'm having less of a comfort level in believing any estimate that comes from from your shop. I'm having some confidence issues with that because I've not been here that long, but I keep seeing things going above what was originally projected. And I wasn't here when those decisions were made, and I'm sure they were made with good intentions, and I'm sure they're going to work out. But what I'm concerned with is, as I mentioned to you yesterday in the budget meeting about the Measure R projects, and I said, are you anticipating the work that you will need and the personnel that you will need? And the CEO said, we don't need to do that now. This is not a budget issue for this budget. But it's a pattern of not being prepared.
I got to interject because I don't want to get in debate with you, but I will tell you, these, as someone who sat on this committee for a long time, and I used to call it the change order committee, okay, and that was one of the frustrations. We take a block of money, we say it's a $47 million project, like you say, a life of project, they get the $47 million and then they come back for 10 more. I said, wait a minute, what'd you do with the first 47? The way we did this is incremental so that we at least have a shot at the review process, up or down, whether they're doing good work or bad work. These are not over budget requests before us today, but budget requests from that are within the life of the project, and this money has been budgeted. So it's not like a change order.
Okay, I agree.
I would you know, go along with your concern. If this was a change order from $7 to $16 million, I'd be up in the roof here someplace. But it was intentional. That's the one thing I can say, Mel. And Supervisor Mullin, she and I have sat in this committee when we used to call it, like I say, the change order committee. So.
Okay, let me see if I can just capsulize what I'm interested in seeing in the future. One is a scope of work that's really reflective with some contingencies of this could happen. This is what we're presenting to you today, board, but if we're successful in securing the dollars that we're trying to secure and we go on with these other projects at a more expedited pace, this is what it's likely to cost you. No, it's not going to be a part of the budget, but at least I want to see a heads up. Two, some type of performance evaluation as we go in stages or phases of work. So we'll know as a board whether this is the type of work that we want to continue to expand without going through the bidding process again with that contractor. Three, on any project, that we make sure we have a fixed price on it, and if anything comes forward, I'm sure we'll have a change order request. And then finally, I just want to make sure that whatever I hear from you, because I take your word as truth, that it's reliable, that, you know, some months later when I ask the same question, that I don't get a different answer. Thank you.
Good.
I'll just have an offline discussion about the merits of using this model versus bench contracting, and it seems to me this is kind of like a hybrid, and it may work, and I just need to see the merits of why this is a better way of going about this. But the only thing that raised a flag for me here was that we're in the second year. We've only expended $14 million, but we've already earmarked $20 million of this contract. So something happened where we're only the second year, although the term was 5 years, that we get a better sense of what you're coming to the board to ask for, and not, us not knowing that you're going to come back in second year asking for almost half of the same thing. So,
we'll be happy to I make a suggestion? What might be a very good idea?
Yes, sir.
Since you're suggesting it.
Yeah. It'd be an excellent idea. You know, I gave you two yesterday and you voted no, so you might vote no on this one, too. No, but seriously, the list that you provided of the projects, you should attach dollar amounts to that of what's been expended, what's the life of the project, instead of just showing this list. Then you might have a better idea so you know it's not change orders, you're still within the framework. You know, while you've expended 14, you're asking for additional dollars. That additional dollars comes out of these other projects versus the original 21.5.
I think that's a great recommendation, Mr. Chair.
Me too.
Yikes. I must have, what did I do wrong?
Put in the minutes.
Anyway, okay, with that, we will move this item forward with that clarification to the full board. Chair will move it. Second, Director Wilson, without objection, so ordered. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. We're going to go back to Caltrans.
I'm going to give an update on the I-5 projects, North County projects. It's probably about a 10 or 15 minute.
Okay, well, why don't we delay it till next month, okay, since we had such a lengthy discussion. I'm hearing mumbling from my colleagues here, and I recognize those sounds. All right, we have, let's see. I think we got taken care of anything else. You have a report?
No, Mr. Chairman, I have no report.
Public comments? John Walsh? John?
I named this the change order committee, your copycatter. In fact, what happened before in Stantec is simple. The mayor went to Stantec and asked them for contributions for a couple of the races, including the school board races. Stantec would not give Mayor Villaraigosa any money. So then Mayor Wilson up here of San Fernando Valley City, he was told to lean on them. Okay, that's what happened. And I'd like you to know that today, when I came here at 11 a.m. at the Vine Street Station, all packages and all purses were being opened and examined. Now, this is the first time that happened by the sheriffs. That's because you have raised the threat level in the city of Los Angeles. Nobody knows about it. I'm going to go to the media. The threat level has been raised, and everybody at certain stations on MTA are being searched.
I thought we were continuing item four, but that your item two. I thought your item five, but Doug's got a brief report on status, a very brief report and a very, very brief read.
Exceedingly brief, Mr. Chair. We do a regular update for you on a number of our projects. This one on I-5, Mr. Miles did a very thorough update for you last month. I have Mr. Grace with me, who will just give you some updates of a couple of key items that have happened since last month. Mr. Grace?
Well, I have a very significant achievement on the Carmenita Interchange. That project was advertised by Caltrans in March. Bids were opened in May 12th. And we're very happy to report that the project bid, at least one of the eight that came in, was about 10% under engineer's estimate. I think in the board report we have an estimated savings of about $11 million. Mike, that's a little bit high. I think it's closer to $10 million or so. But that project is scheduled to start construction next month. We're very excited about it. It's the first of the six I-5 segments to get underway. We have another one going up in November the Alondra Boulevard interchange, which is just north of the Valley View interchange. So we'll come back to the board as necessary. It's a very exciting time.
We appreciate you remembering some of these.
We appreciate that. And we just, you know, every once in a while, we Carmenine Exchange is still there, right? Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
I had dark hair when we started working on that.
Mr. Chair, the right-of-way acquisitions, how are we on that, and will that affect our 1B funding?
The we're watching the right-of-way acquisitions very carefully. Mr. Grace and I are meeting every other week with Caltrans. It is one of the most critical items for us. So we're managing how that's going to be right now. Segments 1, 3, and 4 are the critical ones for the CMIA funding. That's where we're paying our attention. 1 and 3 look like no problem at all. We're focusing more on segment 4. There's 140 parcels to acquire. We're going through Caltrans on a process. We've offered Metro staff. They've taken us up on it so that we can expedite that acquisition. Right now, we are on schedule to meet our 1B funding, but we're watching it very closely to make sure that schedule doesn't slip, trying to create some cushion.
Because we're hearing there are significant issues on right-of-way in Caltrans.
There's a big...
We're hearing that right from the horse's mouth, so...
Yeah, and there is a big
so
concern.
We need to stay on top of that. I mean, this
absolutely
we're time-sensitive, time-critical.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you need our help or some of us folks to help get involved, you need to let us know. We can't help you if we don't know.
Affirmative.
A meeting with the presiding judge to talk about eminent domain and which courts okay. Hear it.
Very good. She's understanding.
Yeah, and the chair of this committee said he'll go out there himself and take it if he has to.
I could use a good appraiser, sir.
Take it out. All right, anything else to come before this committee? We've done public comment. So I sort of clarify item 4, even though it has Mike Miles' name all over, it was not item number 2. That was a separate report, right? And item number 2, you know, that's... We can go ahead. I mean, if you can, we don't need a quorum to do that. Am I correct on item number 2? If somebody has to leave? I think, you know, instead of just keep pushing, I'd like to go ahead and do that is in a time. Oh, do we have another committee meeting?
Yeah.
At what time?
1 o'clock.
Huh?
1.
12. 1 or 12?
Measure R's at 12.
Measure R's at 12. Okay, we'll wait. Okay, then. I'm sorry. I didn't know. Realize. I thought the next committee meeting was at 1, so. Yeah.